Welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCV Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight we have two special guests all the way from Colorado. Jason Marsden, right?
Yes.
Executive Director of Matthew Shepard Foundation. He's here. Hello, Jason.
Hello, good evening.
And his husband, Guy Padgett, who was the first openly gay mayor of Casper, Wyoming. He is also in studio. Hello, Guy.
Hello, it's great to be here.
Yeah, welcome both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're so pleased to have you both. We know you're vacationing out here, and just to stop by the studio and give us the interview is pretty fantastic and a great treat. So thank you very much. It should be a really interesting show tonight, getting to know Jason and Guy, and not only what they do in the world, but about themselves personally, which might be a real treat for people who might know you otherwise as the Executive Director of Matthew Shepard Foundation. But first, before we get into that interview, is news and events with Outbeat member and Matthew Shepard board member, Greg Moralia.
Say. Tell it like it is.
Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for Sunday, May 6th, 2012. With just days to go before North Carolina voters decide whether the state will join the rest of the South in constitutionally prohibiting marriage equality, big-name opponents of Amendment 1 are stepping forward, and one of the latest is Chelsea Clinton, who penned an op-ed on Amendment 1's dangerous consequences on health care, domestic violence prevention, and other issues. She said, "I believe that everyone must stand up for what is right, whenever possible, wherever possible. It is our duty to join the fight on behalf of both gay and lesbian North Carolinians, who were the original targets of Amendment 1, and the tens of thousands of straight male and female North Carolinians who will be collateral damage if the amendment passes this Tuesday." And a follow-up story for one of our loyal listeners. A couple of weeks ago, the U.S. Department of Justice announced it has issued its first indictment under the Matthew Shepard James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act, which President Obama signed into law in 2009. For an alleged anti-gay hate crime. A federal grand jury in London, Kentucky, returned a three-count indictment charging David Jason Jenkins, 37, and Anthony Ray Jenkins, 20, for kidnapping and assaulting Kevin Pennington, and for conspiring with each other and with other unnamed individuals to commit the kidnapping. On April 4th, the two defendants allegedly kidnapped and assaulted Kevin Pennington because of his sexual orientation. And after getting the victim into a truck, the defendants allegedly drove Pennington to a secluded area of the Kingdom Come State Park in Kentucky and assaulted him. Pennington was able to escape during a lull in the attack and hid in the woods until the four stopped looking for him. Among the injuries he suffered were bruises all over his body, a torn ligament in his shoulder, a closed head injury, and a torn ear. Both men pled not guilty on Thursday, and a June trial date has been set. And here locally, the 32nd annual Russian River Women's Weekend happens in Guerneville from May 17th through Monday, May 21st. The weekend kicks off for early birds on Thursday night with a welcome party at McTee's Bullpen in Guerneville from 6 until 10 p.m. And then on Friday, the events begin with Let's Get This Party Started, a pool party which will take place at the R3 Hotel in Guerneville. RAGS, the Russian River Gal Society, will also host a welcome party at the Rainbow Cattle Company, and Pat Lady Guitar Wilder will perform at the Main Street Station, hosted by Simone Campbell. And on Saturday, a river paddle begins the day at 9 a.m. A craft fair will take place on Guerneville's historic walking bridge starting at 10 a.m., and then you can jump into the pool party with DJ Lori Z and the popular Wet Tees t-shirt contest at the R3 Hotel. And then on Saturday evening at 8 p.m., Frankie Kelly will perform at the Main Street Station, and the second annual Pirate Dance Party will be held at the River Theater, 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. DJ Lady Ryan will spin, and the Black Diamond Belly Dancers will perform. And then on Sunday morning at 10 a.m., the motorcycle run will happen, followed by the Liquid Church Pool Party, including Lip Sync for Your Life and the Painted Lady Tattoo Contest. This will happen at the R3 Hotel from noon to 4 p.m. And at the same time, the 5th annual Russian River Women's Weekend Poker Tournament will take place at the Main Street Station. Women's Weekend winds down on Monday with Leftovers Lounge from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the R3 Hotel. You can learn more about Russian River Women's Weekend at their website, www.russianriverwomensweekend.org. VIP passes are available for $30 until May 17th. There will be $35 thereafter. You must be 21 to purchase the VIP pass. Included in this pass is admittance to the Fright Night Drag Show, the Saturday Night Dance Party, both pool parties at the R3 Hotel, and discounts at local businesses. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Tuesday, May 8th at 6 p.m., the trans group will meet at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. And also on Tuesday at 6 p.m., Give Back Tuesday benefits Food for Thought, the Sonoma County AIDS Food Bank. The dinner raffle and fun happens at the Rainbow Cattle Company in Guerneville. And on Wednesday, May 9th at 6 p.m., the Marin Women Seeking Women, an informal social group, will gather at Jason's Restaurant, 300 Jake's Landing in Greenbrae. And on Thursday, May 10th at 7 p.m., the Men for Men support group will meet at the Marin AIDS Project, 910 Irwin Street in San Rafael. And finally, on Saturday, May 12th at 10 a.m., Food for Thought Food Drive happens at Oliver's in Cotati and Rincon Valley and the Bicentennial Lucky in Santa Rosa. If you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, be sure to tell us about it by going to our website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat News. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Morelia. Now back to Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Greyer.
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof on Outbeat Radio with Diana and myself, Sheridan. And we're here in studio with Jason Mardson, Executive Director of the Matthew Shepard Foundation, and his husband, Guy Padgett, who was the first openly gay mayor of Casper, Wyoming. So hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Again. Hello. So, we went on your website, Jason, and Cher and I were reading your bio there. And we realized, like, Sheridan High School, Sheridan, you graduated from, and you lived there.
Mm-hmm.
And it just cracked us up because Sheridan is Sheridan, you know. My wife is Sheridan.
Have you ever met anyone named Sheridan before?
No. I don't think I have, other than the sort of dead general that we're all named after.
Right. And I've never met anyone from Sheridan, Wyoming, so it's like, whoa, that's a trip. And Sheridan High School, wow. What was your mascot?
The Bronc, the unbroken wild horse.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Like it.
It's very, cool. Very ranching-oriented town, uh-huh. Historically.
Mm. Okay. Well, thank you. We just wanted to share that because we really cracked up. And every time we go somewhere and we see something with her name on it, it's just great. Anyway, so tell us, Jason, what is it like being executive director for Matthew Shepard Foundation?
Oh, my goodness. Well, like any management job, there's a lot of memos and patient management of staff and effort to build a great board of directors that has national scope and a variety of expertise. We have the good fortune to challenge ourselves to raise about $1 million every year for our educational programs, which we're continually seeking to expand their reach and their impact. You know, we get a lot of calls from the media whenever there's a particularly high-profile case of a hate crime or a particularly tragic case of bullying of LGBT youth or acts within the political sphere against marriage equality or in support of it. Having been a gay person being a member of the news media at one point and watching news media coverage evolve and focus on LGBT issues in America, it's unique to be at the nexus of those, working for people like Judy and Dennis Shepard and trying to help them continue their efforts to make Matt's legacy durable and meaningful for LGBT Americans and their allies. So, you know, it's very humbling, it involves a lot of the sort of quiet, tedious, patient effort that any kind of social change effort or any small enterprise involves. So you can go 1 minute from feeling inspired by seeing what some 17-year-old kids have done in New Jersey to elevate issues of acceptance in their community, and 10 minutes later you can have your mind absolutely blown by how far we've run over on the travel budget for the year. You know, it's just and days go by and you have that mix of the mundane and the extraordinary that I think characterizes all great efforts in life.
So how did you get involved? I mean, did you know Dennis and Judy, or
Guy and I both knew Matt. So Matt was a friend of ours from the very small LGBT community in Wyoming.
Matt was actually in junior high with me, so known the family for ages, really.
For a long time before they were anything other than folks from Casper, Wyoming, like we were. I was a newspaper reporter when Matt was killed, and we received the press release from the Laramie Police Department and the Albany County Sheriff's Office about describing what appeared to be an anti-gay hate crime and excessive violence, and the victim is in the hospital in Fort Collins in intensive care and may or may not emerge from this coma, and then it transpires that it was our friend. And Guy and I had just been dating for a few months point.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, over the years, like, we, you know, tried to be involved with Judy's efforts to begin the foundation and begin sort of her mission of speaking and going across the country, really trying to spread a message of acceptance. We support the foundation, go to the dinners, and
donate money and volunteer. They actually had us be bouncers at a thing one time, which, if you could see us out there in Radio Land, we do not look like bouncers.
What do you look? How would you describe yourselves?
I'm kind of on the skinny side of things, a little bookish looking, possibly.
Is that because you wear glasses?
And the myopia I would have if I didn't have these on.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe they thought I was going to throw a collection of Proust at somebody if they got out of line, but that might work. Those are big books, but. Yeah, so over time we did that, and I had the background of having been in nonprofit management for 7 or 8 years by the time that Judy Shepherd decided that being our primary educational speaker and traveling the country and serving as board chair and being the executive director was the thing had just grown to be too big for any
one
super
person
to do it. So she sought to recruit professional management for the organization, and we were at a point in our lives when I was looking for new opportunity, and so the timing was quite good. And I, you know, believe deeply in the mission and what they've been accomplishing all these years.
You said something that struck my curiosity. Since I'm a teacher, you said that you're working on expanding your educational programs.
Yes.
I'm curious what that means.
Well, for context's sake. The primary and most visible vector of our educational work has been Judy Shepherd herself and her husband Dennis to some extent. These are Matt's parents, traveling around the country for many years, speaking in assemblies at high schools and colleges, workplace gay and lesbian employee groups, community organizations like the LGBT centers of any number of major and sometimes smaller cities. Writing articles, appearing in public service announcements, all that sort of thing. And it has been largely Judy telling her experience, helping someone understand what it's like to go through not only being the loved one of a crime victim, but at the locus of so much international media attention and political scrutiny, her efforts to get Congress to pass hate crimes legislation and so on and so forth. And then very robust question and answer sessions with the students. And in many cases, the younger the students, the more thoughtful and interesting the questions are. And so then over time, we have invited additional people to participate in the Speakers Bureau who have different areas of expertise. I do quite a bit of speaking often to high school diversity mm-hmm. days, which is a very popular new format mm-hmm. In American high schools. And what we seek to do now is to develop bullying-related educational exercises that could be delivered online. We could have Judy Shepherd on a plane every minute of the day, but she could only reach a fraction of the audiences that would like to have her. Mm-hmm. So bottling some of our expertise in bullying and what we've learned about coping strategies and resiliency strategies for youth in particular, trying to put those into interactive online exercises where you're presented with familiar situations and a range of choices how you might deal with it and resources that help inform which of those choices you might execute. And feedback as to whether those choices are, relatively speaking, better or worse in most situations.
That sounds so great, because if someone's going to do have an online experience like that, I think they're more likely to answer honestly when there's not an audience of other students, like
right.
If you have a class discussion. Because I used to teach aggression replacement training, which is scenarios, and you get up and you role play, and kids are very shy, right. and they might not be real. And I'm thinking, boy, using technology, kids are very into technology and their phones mm-hmm. and everything. I mean, it sounds like it's a really great idea.
Well, and I was inspired, frankly, by having read all those Choose Your Own Adventure books as a kid.
Could you say that one more time?
Choose Your Own Adventure format, which those of us maybe in my age range, approximately 40, these wonderful little paperback books where you're dealing with a situation, and if you'd like to do X, turn to page 35, and if you'd like to do Y, turn to page 76, and then you get to one of those pages and discover what you've done to yourself, potentially. And they were tongue-in-cheek, but also meant to, I think, be, they were one of the initial interactive formats out there, very analog because it was a paperback book, but it presages complex first-person video games and other things that technology has really brought to life for at the user experience level. So just having loved those things and feeling that they were empowering, wondering what we could do with technology for that, and what we've discovered is there are tools for managing that format. There are tools for presenting it in a lively way that really seems real to the user, and it takes good storytelling, and it mm-hmm. takes a good background resources, and it takes grounding in a sort of didactic, educationally credentialable system of learning. So we've discovered what the challenges are going to be and some of the steps we think we'll take initially, but in an effort to do it well, we'll have to be patient to take the time to do it right. Mm-hmm. But that's, I think, will be the next great leap for our educational outreach in terms of the number of people we can reach and the impact we can have on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds really exciting.
Wish us luck. And if there are further advances in this along the way, we hope to be able to effectively partner with others to make this kind of learning come to life.
I like what you're saying about how you're interactive, the Speakers Bureau going into the schools and stuff. And I'm just curious, when you say that the younger kids are more thoughtful in their questions, what do you think that's about?
Oh, well, it's a tremendously liberating thing to be a sixth grader, I think, in today's world. Mm. I think it would be, anyway. We sent Mrs. Shepherd up to Telluride, Colorado 2 years ago, and the school system was quite nervous about would they let the junior high school age kids in there because they might horse around or be inappropriate or giggle at the wrong time or whatever, and their concerns could not have been farther from the truth. Full credit to them for caring enough about making Mrs. Shepherd comfortable and making it go well, but they asked thoughtful questions about the role of religion in creating social prejudices, not only against LGBT people but against other people who are different, people who are simply of different religions. Questions about why politicians take longer to come to conclusions than the people they serve. You know, these are the questions that make adults die inside a little bit when they're asked them. And they're quite unashamed and genuinely interested in the answers. And you could have heard a pin drop in that room when she got around to answering the questions. The most respectful audience I think I've seen her speak many times. And I mean, nobody even coughed or anything. It was remarkable.
Yeah, I think sometimes adults don't give kids that age enough credit that they know. And it's so, it's so real.
Right. Well, and this was living history to them. This is, if you're 12 or 13 years old today, Matt Shepherd passed away before you were even born. Mm-hmm. And this is something that might be in your American history textbook, depending on what state you're in and what the textbook standards are written like, what kind of diversity-related content would be in them. But this is living history to them, to meet someone who's a participant in a historical event that predated their own lives, mm-hmm. and yet to have the context that they have of being growing up in a world where acceptance is so much more a part of normal social constructs that they're simply used to. You know, this would be like meeting someone who had had a cross burned on their lawn 50 years ago. It would be absolutely breathtaking to a person who, my goodness, it'd be breathtaking to somebody much older than 12, I think, that we lived in a country that had apartheid and racial violence in it to the degree that we did. Mm-hmm. And it brings it to life to have someone walk into your school and be that person and tell you that experience.
Yeah.
Having seen Holocaust survivors come and speak when I was a college student, it had roughly that same effect on me. It was just so, you knew it happened, and it's so much a part of our history, but to meet someone for whom that was a personal experience is an entirely different thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, that's we bring a little bit of that history to people.
Well, thank you. That's a great answer to a short question. A wonderful answer. And
it's a polite way of saying I should get more to the point, perhaps.
No, that was the point. That was the point.
Beautiful delivery.
I just want to help remind people that to stay abreast of the situation and the educational programs and the online stuff is just to keep going to Matthew Shepherd Foundation website. And just type in Google Matthew Shepherd Foundation and you'll get to the website, yeah?
Yes, and we have a YouTube channel with some organizational videos and also videos that young people around the U.S. and Canada have put up about the impact that we have had on their thinking and on their communities, which are some of them are extremely moving.
Excellent. Is there a link on your website to the YouTube channel?
Yes, there's the little Y and a square-shaped thing up at the top, and there's a little bird-shaped thing that takes you to our Twitter and a little Facebook
link
excellent. As well.
I think this is a good time for a music break, and then when we come back, Guy, we're going to talk to you about being an openly gay mayor of a very, would you say, conservative city in Wyoming?
It'd be fair to say Casper is fairly conservative.
So we don't want anyone to think that we forgot Guy, and we will be talking to him after this music break. In fact, Guy, you were going to introduce the song?
Oh, yes. Okay, so this is one of the songs. It's actually one of our favorite songs, I guess. There are probably several options, but this might be closest to being our song. And it's it is Better Together by Jack Johnson. And I've always loved it. I feel like we're better when we're together than when we're apart.
I know my life's been better anyway.
There's no combination of words I could put on the back of a postcard. No song that I could sing, but I can try for your heart. Our dreams, and they are made out of real things, like a shoebox of photographs with sepia tone loving. Love is the answer, at least, for most of the questions of my heart. Like, why are we here and where do we go? And knock on me so hard. It's not always easy, and sometimes life can be deceiving. I'll tell you one thing, it's always better when we're together. It's always better when we're together. Yeah, we'll look at them stars when we're together. Well, it's always better when we're together. Yeah, it's always better when we're together. Moments just might find their way into my dreams tonight, but I know that they'll be gone when the morning light sings or brings new things. For tomorrow night you see that they'll be gone too. Too many things I have to do, but if all of these dreams might find their way into my day-to-day scene, I'd be under the impression I was somewhere in between with only two, just me and you. Not so many things we got to do or places we got to be. We'll sit beneath the mango tree now. Yeah, it's always better when we're together. We're somewhere in between together. Well, it's always better when we're together. Yeah, it's always better when we're together. Combination of words I could say, but I will still tell you one thing, we're better together.
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof on Outbeat Radio, and we're talking with Guy and Jason out from Colorado, and that was one of their favorite songs, Better Together by
Jack Johnson.
Jack Johnson. Well, it was very beautiful. Thanks for bringing that song with you. So, Guy, before we ask you the question about being mayor of Casper, Wyoming, as a gay man, you did say something earlier about being friends with Matthew Shepard when you were in junior high.
Yes.
I'm a little curious about that, and I bet you other people are too. Did you know you were gay back then? Did Matthew know he was gay back then? How did all that...
No, that's a good question. I mean, I suppose I probably did know, looking back. But, I mean, I think at the time, for me, it was more a sense of being different than the other boys at school and in junior high. You know, Matt, I don't know if he knew when he was young, although I suppose Judy's always said that she always knew he was.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess a mother always knows, yeah. Really. But no, like, I didn't know Matt was gay until, like, I ran into him a couple months before he was killed, actually. Like,
oh,
and we
wow.
reconnected a little bit. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, you're gay? Oh, yeah, me too. Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
What a coincidence. So.
Yeah. I was just curious, because when I was in junior high, I wasn't gay at the time, and
right.
then as an adult, I run into people who I went to school with who are gay, and it's like I have to think back. It's like, oh, was that
yeah,
when she
I guess
chased
that...
me when I had her shoe? And, you know,
I
it's
guess
like,
it all makes sense.
Yeah,
now.
It all
yeah.
makes sense.
The pieces are falling into place.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have actually kept the yearbooks handy, and I continue to go back and look and say, who is that? Oh, that kid. Okay.
Yeah, I recently connected with a kid, a friend now, a life friend, who we were in second grade together, and we're both gay, and it's like, wow. And, you know, Facebook right. helps
yeah,
people
yeah,
connect,
absolutely.
And, you know. Got
well, then you're left sort of thinking, like, why did, and how did we not have anything to talk about at that
yeah.
time? Like, we had
yeah.
so much in common. I
yeah.
recently reconnected with a friend from high school. We had actually run against each other for class vice president in 1980. then I, you know, I saw him once, like, during college, and then I went 15 or 16 years without seeing him and ran into him in a convenience store in Denver, where he has since moved with his partner of, like, over 10 years, and just sort of like, really? We didn't figure that out? But you don't.
Yeah. Interesting. So when did you come out, Guy?
Well, I guess that's also part of the thing about being gay is that
yeah.
you're constantly coming out to people. But, like, to myself and mm-hmm. to my family and at least close friends, I guess, it would have been about 19, 20. Like,
But how old are you now so we can get a context?
You're
only 21.
I just turned 22 the other day.
Uh-huh.
Now I'm 34.
Okay.
So it was around 19, 20. And mm-hmm. for me, it wasn't, like, a single big thing. Like, I mean, sort of, I at least came out to people, like, different times in different ways, and, you know, it wasn't like, I always felt like there should be some big dramatic scene, like, where you gather everyone together and have this huge dramatic I'm gay moment, but it's not really like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and, you know, you find yourself coming out to people at 34 all these years later,
right.
like, you have to come out to people in whatever professional or personal
yeah.
context. Like,
so how did it come to be that you, ran for mayor, got elected as mayor, and people knew you were gay and that was okay? I mean,
yeah.
how did all that come to pass?
Well, Jason and I had been living in Washington, D.C., and Jason had just gotten a job with a nonprofit, Wyoming Conservation Voters. He's going to become a lobbyist lobbying for environmental causes in Wyoming. And I really didn't know what I was going to do. like back in Casper, like, I didn't have anything lined up, no job or anything. And it's actually partially my mom's fault. She was on this, the school board. And, you know, I saw how she was able to, one of the great things about a town like Casper is it's small enough that one person can really have a very appreciable, discernible impact, to make change for good. And I'd seen her do that, and going back there, and one of the issues that was going on was actually this idea that young people were fleeing to the big cities. I thought to myself, well, if you want a community where young people feel like they can stay, then you need a community that will really listen to young people's voices. And so there's a seat on the city council coming open. It was an open seat. The guy was actually moving on to run for county commission, and so I thought, you know what, I'm going to try and do this. So that's sort of, that's how I got involved in politics. But as for being gay and running for public office in some place that, I mean, Wyoming is a very conservative place. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But there's also a streak in Wyoming culture and politics of sort of individualism, maybe even libertarianism, that, you know, sort of a mind your own business sort of mentality. And I think that from that perspective, there are a lot of people in Wyoming who basically feel like your sexuality is your own business, and they don't, you know, on the one hand, they don't, quote unquote, want their faces rubbed in it. Like, they're not necessarily going to be out there supporting a gay pride parade. But on the other hand, it cuts in a positive way, too. And they really don't feel like it's their business to tell you who to be or how to live your life. I mean, this is not universal, but I think there is a strong undercurrent of that sort of libertarianism in Wyoming. And I found through the years that I was on the city council that there are very few people who wanted to make an issue out of it in a negative way. So, overall, I would say it was very positive being a gay man in politics mm-hmm. in Wyoming.
When you would have gatherings, political gatherings, did you feel free to bring Jason with you? And
no, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, most of the time, Jason would be like, I don't think I want to go to that one.
Well, everything's going to the grocery store is a political gathering in a city of 50,000. And like, some conversations standing in front of the cheese counter about like taxation of food and things like that, and it's just like, my ice cream is melting. I'm really thinking, could we carry this on another time?
Can we at least move this to the checkout aisle?
Right, let's get this thing moving. we'd go to banquets for the absolutely. Art museum, which guy was on the art museum board, and
well, and people knew Jason was in politics too. He was lobbying the state legislature. I mean,
we were standing in the lobby at the state house on more than one occasion where he's bothering somebody on appropriations about block grants for communities, and I'm trying to get somebody's attention about wildlife habitat funding and sort of trying to not pay attention to one another being in the room because we might be trying to get the same dollars out of the same lawmakers for different things.
Yeah, I want to just mention that about the environment, the work that you've been doing, Jason. I've been reading about that, so I just want to thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Protecting the wildlife and, yeah, really important work.
Looking after critters that can't speak for themselves and looking after disadvantaged minority communities that don't have a voice for themselves are not such different things, mm-hmm. although you do go to much prettier places for the environmental work and kind of, you know, taking in the view from a mountain is very different from the educational conferences and other types of events you do to advance social change the way we do now. But I always felt the same way about it. Guy tells me I have a profound sense of justice, which I've always thought is his nice mm-hmm. way of saying that I let a lot of things get under my skin and really try to do something about them, which...
Yeah, we need people like that, right, Guy?
Absolutely.
Right. So let's talk about your relationship. So how long have you guys been together?
Almost 14
Almost
years.
14. Whoa. It'll be 14 this September.
September what?
Oh, here's the thing.
Different story. No. We always get that. Let's see.
No. We purposely, like, we met on Labor Day weekend. And, like, so we purposely had, like, our wedding ceremony on Labor Day weekend. So I never remember the exact day. I'm just like, oh, it's Labor Day weekend.
I believe it was September 6th and September 1st, 4 years apart, but... Being able to actually remember when it's coming around, we thought would be easier if we had the ceremony the 4 years after our first date.
Mm-hmm. 14 years. Wow.
14 years, and it just adds up, you know. It's we had a relationship for about 9 months before we moved to Washington, D.C. together, and then we lived in Washington, D.C. for 2.5 years. And then we moved to Casper and were involved in politics and civic life for 7 or 8 years there, and we've been in Denver for 3 years, and all of those are different chapters of the same relationship, but in a lot of ways, the relationship those kids were having with each other 14 years ago is profoundly different from the one we have today. But it changes by degree, so you don't notice it.
Well, I think a healthy relationship does change. It needs to change.
It has to
grow. I mean, otherwise it gets stale if you're trying to keep recreating the same relationship that you had with one another when you were 21 and I was 21 and you were 26. I mean, that couldn't last forever. It needed to grow and change.
So how do you grow and change?
That's a really good question.
We watch a lot of PBS and we listen to a lot of NPR, actually. We read, we take in music, we play pub trivia and constantly learn about things we never imagined. Strong family relationships, watching our siblings have kids, civic life, job challenges.
Well, how do you negotiate your relationship with each other outside of everything you just mentioned? I mean, how do you not let your relationship grow stale with each other? If you were on an island, I mean, what do you do to, you know, challenge each other or push each other, or what do you do?
Jason had that.
Oh, gosh. Are we doing enough of that?
I don't know. Maybe we're not.
I'm worried now. We're not going to make it.
We need to re-examine
our
thinking,
lives here. They're thinking on this one.
Well, 14 years, you have to be doing something.
You know what? We laugh a lot. We play word games. We make fun of the cats. The cats do ridiculous things, and we make fun of them and imagine. We imagine they're like dowager duchesses and things from the 1790s and what sort of tiresome habits people like that would have.
I think on a broader level, for me anyway, recognizing that sometimes life is sort of cyclical and goes through phases, and sometimes we'll have a phase where it's we're having a really great time or going out with friends or going to museums and doing stuff to broaden our mind, but sometimes you get in a little bit of a funk and you stay in and the most exciting thing you do is watch, public television. And for me, growing as a part of our relationship has been recognizing those kind of cycles, and that just because you're going through a rough patch or just because life is boring right now doesn't mean that you won't come out through the other end of that and something different and new is going to happen that we can experience together.
Right. And sooner or later it's spring again and we're bicycling again.
Right.
It's that season when everybody from past chapters of our lives wants to use the Denver airport and stays with us weekend after weekend after weekend, and we reconnect with people that way. Writing, drawing.
This is good.
We talk a lot.
Yeah, this is
we
really important.
We argue about what's going on in the world and why.
I think just being able to take an interest in one another's hobbies, or like you love football, and I got to be honest, I do not like football. But but I joined fantasy football team.
I did.
I was like, well, you know what? I can either insist that he doesn't watch his Sunday football, or I can actually try and take an interest in this hobby.
Right.
So
of course, he defeated me in our league championship.
How did that happen?
My brilliant strategy, of course.
Jay Cutler threw an interception at a really critical moment, and that's all it took.
Wow.
So I was obligated to buy him the trophy, which is loser buys the winner the trophy. So we have this wonderful trophy to his fantasy football brilliance sitting in a corner that I don't have an equivalent one of, even though I've been trying to help run that league for years.
But that's fun. It's great. And I love the way you guys are playing with each other and stuff. That's really neat that we get to see how special. But I think it's really important what you're saying about how, the relationship might have this ups and downs, right?
Yeah.
But you stick with it. With it and you make it work. And that's what we really preach on this show about, how do you make it work? And so what you're saying is right up our alley about how do you do that.
I really strongly believe that. I think that there's this sort of Hollywood fairy tale idea that love is easy and always beautiful. And no, it's not always easy and beautiful and wonderful. And relationships are work. You have to work at them. They don't just happen on the sitcoms. Or
right. And all work, it's rewarding. People stop showing up to do it if you aren't, who would go to work if they didn't get paid to do it anymore? Very few people. The payment you receive for doing the work of a great relationship is the affection and partnership and the sense of continuity, the sense of understanding another person as deeply as you're able to, and this was a tremendous gift. we're gay kids in our 20s and in a place best known for producing Vice President Cheney. I mean, it's a very conservative place, and there's no gay bar in Casper or anywhere in Wyoming, nor has there ever been one. It's the only state in the union where that's true. There's no LGBT community center. There were no GSAs in the high schools or at the community college or any of these institutions that are quite common now. So we, you know, we met at a little house party that mutual acquaintances threw, and we both happened to go on the same night and were introduced to one another. But the likelihood of that ever having happened was quite small. And for something this durable to have grown out of it is just, I mean, people are just not handed that kind of a prize in their life that often. But they should hope for and expect it, because we all deserve that. And it can happen so quickly, just before you know it.
Mm-hmm.
A life-changing introduction occurs and it goes from there.
Yeah, I like that when you say they people should expect it. I think a lot of times people are pessimistic and and expect not to get that. That's their expectation, that it won't happen to me.
Yeah.
You know.
Or they've gone through breakups right. and
yeah.
been disappointed, and so they kind of hold off on the love, you know, angle. So were you with other people before?
I dated some really some odd characters, some nice people, some people I just never really felt any connection to at all, but not all that much. I was really busy with work, and there was almost less than zero gay community in Casper in my early 20s, and most of my friends were straight couples that, you know, were already on the parenthood track, and professional people who were a few years older and further down the line with their lives that I befriended in those years. But I never really had as meaningful a relationship as this, or even close to it.
What about you, Guy?
I had some boyfriends in college. Some that I cared very deeply about. I wouldn't say I was in love, but I mean, you know, I was 21 when we met, so I hadn't dated that many people, only maybe two or three.
I think this is a good time for a music break. And Jason, you were going to introduce this next song.
Oh, well, this is That Green Gentleman by Panic at the Disco, which is something much younger people than me listen to a lot, I think. But it encapsulates this huge feeling of change that occurred in our life 3 years ago when we left Wyoming and politics behind and moved to Denver, Colorado.
Thank you. Enjoy. if you just joined us, this is Living Proof, and we're in studio with Jason and Guy. And during our music break, we had a caller call in, an old-timer, talking about a gay bar in Evanston, Wyoming, about 45 or 50 years ago. And so we were chatting about that during the music break. And Jason and Guy, you have some interesting thoughts about that.
Yeah, well, it's the first I've heard of that one. It doesn't surprise me at all. We had friends who lived through the boom in Casper in the 1970s when everyone was just awash in money from the oil business. Yeah. And there were people would throw parties at disused hangars at the airport, or that certain bar would get word of mouth about how the gay guys were going there.
I mean, like it was like that when we were there. There was no gay bar, but like you
knew where to go.
Knew where to go. Like people would talk amongst themselves, like, "Oh, we're going here," and like that would last for a while. And
sometimes the bar owner would find out that that's what was being said about their bar, and they'd make it known that they didn't want that crowd, or perhaps, you know, they were happy for the business. And but it was always this sub rosa thing, you know. You could never hang a pride flag out front, or sponsor a parade, or advertise in a gay and lesbian travel guide nationally. That would never happen on the you know, prima facie gay bar level has not yet happened there. But it's really interesting to know that people who lived 50 years ago were sexual beings as well, and they wanted to go that's places right. and meet one another.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, cool. So listen, time is ticking, and we have some important questions to ask you, so get ready. No, this is the quiz. No. No, we were thinking about, we always like to inquire about family and who was there to support you, and do you have siblings? Because you talked about your wedding, and was it a large wedding? Was it a small wedding? And who did you invite? So something about your family, we heard Guy, your mom was supportive of you.
Yeah, very much so. And my dad and my brothers and sisters, they're all really very loving. I mean, heck, I think my dad likes Jason better than me sometimes. He loves like coming down to Denver. He'll take us out to dinner. They'll talk politics and like. But yeah, no, my entire family has been great. Just very supportive and very loving. I'm lucky to have them. In fact, I'm going to see all of them all at once. All five brothers and sisters, and my mom and dad and stepmom and grandmother, family reunions. It'll be the first time all of us have been together in a very long time, and that can be a little overwhelming because there are so many of us to deal with, but I'm looking forward to it.
And when is that?
Oh, in June.
Mm. His grandmother's turning 90.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Are you the only gay child in your family that you
so
know of?
So far, yes. So far. All of my brothers and sisters appear to be very straight. Mm. Yeah, I'm like only gay one in the family.
Well, it's important to find a niche.
That's right. I'm distinguishing myself here.
my family situation is different. My father was killed in an accident when I was 8 years old. I was raised, my sister and I have a sister. We were raised by our mother. And my mother and I have had a parting of the ways over my sexuality, which is something that she has a lot of difficulty with and does not feel comfortable with what I do professionally. And we've chosen to cease our communication with one another about that. My sister's wonderful. She has three kids. They're living far enough away that we don't see them as much as I'd like to, but at least every few years. And my grandparents are all gone now. My grandparents were very supportive. We lost my grandma last year, and her last two siblings have passed away within the last 2 years. So that whole generation now, the grandparents' generation on both sides of my family, are gone now, which has been really rough, and really miss them. But they were a big source of support to me all throughout my life. So we went from a very small family to a considerably smaller one in the last few years.
Mm. Yeah. Do you see you and your mom ever reconciling?
I have no idea if that would happen. I've tried to not game it out in my mind. If that's something that she would be interested in doing, I would be receptive to communicating about what that would look like and what we would want to bring to that as individuals. Mm-hmm. But it's I've had to let that happen, and I'm not I don't know, maybe you perceive this from our brief time together, but I'm not the kind of person that's very comfortable letting go of things and letting them take the course that they will take without my hand on the wheel. So that's been a lesson for me, to let that proceed without my hand on the wheel, and where it will end up, I don't know, but I've tried not to prejudge it.
I'm just curious, how long ago was this that you
decided? I've not seen my mom in 10 years. We stopped talking to each other 3 years ago, and I genuinely, and if anyone out there knows one or both of us, I would hasten to point out, I genuinely wish her well and wish her happiness and communicated that at the time. And I hope the wish is reciprocal, but my wish for her to be happy is sincere and stands on its own.
It's nice that you have Guy's family.
It usually is, yes. Yeah. They're quite a handful. I remember being invited over to family dinners when they were all still at home. And, man, six smart, gifted kids, two really smart parents, and then somebody brings a date into that. It's like,
it can be a little overwhelming.
Yeah.
I felt like I needed to know where the front and back door to that place was at any given moment, just in case it went south.
Maybe
at the
side
table.
Door just to be...
Okay, this is the time of the show where we like to offer you the opportunity to give advice to our audience. And it seemed like you were just hitting on something really important, Jason, around, I mean, you could give any advice that you like, but I just thought your situation with your mom, and I know there are a lot of kids out there who are struggling with relationships with their parents and being accepted. So this is opportunity, whatever direction you want to take it. Some advice, and you know, just share.
It's a heavy responsibility to give advice. I've tried to learn the lesson in life not to give advice where it isn't sought. But
suggestions?
Well, I mean, I think something
offering.
I think something you hit on there, Jason, was actually really important. You're saying how you don't like to leave things unresolved. You don't like to be out of control of how something is going to resolve. But that you kind of had to do that with your mom.
Right.
I mean, and I think that's something, because I don't think any of us really like to be out of control. I mean, to varying degrees, at least, no one wants to be out of control. But sometimes you do have to accept that there are just situations out there that the best thing you can do is be graceful about it and let it run its course. That maybe trying to control it or trying to force something to resolution, sometimes you can't.
Yeah.
And sometimes the best thing you can do is just be graceful and dignified about it. And
how do you do that? How do you tell a 13-year-old to do that? How does that look?
I don't know. Because I don't think 13-year-old me would have taken that advice very well. Mm-hmm. But
grace is two things. Grace is a noun. It is a state of being. It's a place where you recognize you cannot control or shape things around you. The world is not what it ought to be. You have dignity, and you will protect your dignity and your decency and let others attend to theirs. And grace is a verb. Grace is something we can do to one another. You can grace another person's life with your wisdom or your sense of humor or your love or your compassion. And I'm as lapsed as a Christian gets, I'll tell you that much. But these are fundamental lessons about how we wish to be treated, and how we ought to be treating one another. And I've joked with people that my job is telling people to behave the way they pretty much already know they ought to behave. And we know these things instinctively. We just have to be strong and willful enough to remember them when stressful situations come along.
Mm.
Live more like that, and you'll be living in a great world.
Yes. Last question. I just got told we don't have time for questions, so I want to thank you both so much for coming onto our show, for being real, for gracing us with your wisdom, and I want to thank Greg, our engineer, for another fabulous engineer session, making us all sound so great. And remind everybody, remember that you too can be living proof, like Guy and Jason to live your life proudly, freely, out loud, and with grace. Until next month,
good night.
I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way. Can't stop me now. And you can. So many answers.